the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, host for the show and founder of Yes to Life, the UK's integrative cancer care charity, providing people with cancer with support and information about the benefits available to them within integrative medicine. My guest this week is a regular on the show and someone who's been flying the flag for lifestyle interventions for cancer for most of his long and distinguished career. Oncologist Professor Robert Thomas has become well known for his high-quality trials of nutritional and exercise interventions, particularly in prostate cancer, and has recently published the results of a new study that I'm keen to find out more about.
Good morning, Rob. Great to have you back on the show again.
Good morning, Robin. Thanks for having me.
And with more good news for men with prostate cancer. So, in today's show, I want to focus on the results of your latest trial, which once again uses a nutritional intervention to control the progress of prostate cancer. Now, there's lots of aspects of this trial and the results I want to go into, but first, I'm keen to highlight the patient-centered design of the trial. To me, this is super important, as trials, understandably, they've got to have very strict criteria, but these criteria tend to be in the interests of those doing the trial, but not necessarily in the interests of patients. So the interests of patients, to me, they're simple. They want to live longer and have a better quality of life. That's it. And these, of course, should really be the endpoints for all trials of medicines. But I wonder if you can tell us about the design of your trial and the ways in which the participants helped to shape that.
I'm glad you asked that question, actually, because I learned a lot from patients in the design of this study. Because when, you know, traditionally you set up a scientific committee with statisticians and so forth, and they give you this trial, which, you know, statistically would be the most powerful. But in reality, when you suggest it to patients, they say, well, this is not really what we're interested in, and we don't really want to go into this study with what you're proposing. So we worked with three patient advocacy groups, and in fact had probably over 400 patients looking at various aspects of the design. And normally when you involve patients, they just sort of add a few commas and full stops to the patient information sheet, so you can then submit it to the journal and say, look, aren't I good? I've involved patients. But they don't really change the design. This time they really did change the design.
Right.
For example, you know, we wanted to look at you know, the latest dietary interventions which would have an impact on patients living with prostate cancer, not only to slow the progression, but to improve their well-being and symptoms. So the obvious design would be, you know, to have a couple of placebos looking at the intervention. But when we asked patients, they said, look, we 60 to 70% of us take nutritional interventions already. You know, we're not going to go into a study where you tell us to stop taking them and just take a placebo.
Right.
So we had to completely redesign it. So, for example, in this study, we said, well, what about if we give you an intervention which we believe is the latest sort of what we call phytochemical-rich intervention? So these are, you know, your broccoli, your green tea, so forth, which we'll go into a bit later in this interview.
Yeah.
So we'll give you, you know, we'll give you a supplement and you can stop everything else. And then we'll randomize you to the second part of the intervention, which was a gut health intervention. And would you mind if we randomized that against placebo? And they said, yeah, that's absolutely fine, because we don't take things like probiotics generally in prostate cancer, but we do take the other things. So we completely redesigned it, went back to the statisticians, got power calculations. So that when we then approached patients in clinic and said, right, this is a design of study, would you like to go into it? They read it and said, well, yeah, absolutely, yes. You know, this is really what we're interested in. We'd love to enter. And we only actually had 3 out of 220 patients saying no.
Really?
To recruit. Yeah. So, and that was for other sort of logistical reasons. So it was a really good lesson for me and probably other researchers that if you get patients involved, you may have to compromise a little bit statistically. But you get fast recruitment, you get good compliance, and you get more of a reflection to the real world. the challenge is then when you go, and this is what's a little bit disappointing, you then go to journals and you say this, and they say, oh, why didn't you have a, you know, a placebo-only trial? And then you try to explain it's because patients don't want it. And, well, we got it published, but there was always that question being thrown back at us. So, you know, this is the world we live in. They want you to sort of have patient involvement, but they don't actually want to hear what they're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But we did, and we stuck to that.
Well, that's fascinating, and really demonstrates how, you know, by actually asking people what they want, well, first of all, you're bound to be doing a trial which is heading in the direction that they actually want, which is going to give them potentially longer or better life. So that's brilliant. And of course, yeah, you, as you say, you've got all the advantages of they actually want to do it at the other end, which is fantastic. And a very good point you made about the compliance aspect and the accuracy of the results. Because, of course, lots of people who are out to save their lives are quite prepared to say, yep, I'll give up all my supplements, but then just carry on taking them in order to get on the trial, which, of course, messes up the trial results.
Absolutely.
So, brilliant to actually really get people on side, offer them a really good alternative to what they're doing. And they say, well, why not? You know, I'm going to get all these nice supplements for nothing. And it'll cover me for all the stuff that I'm taking now. Brilliant. Really good.
Can I just reinforce that?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Because if people had carried on taking lots and lots of different supplements, there would have been complete bias between the two randomized groups. And, you know, patients are given their time to us, and to give them, you know, a supplement for nothing was also a bit of an incentive. And I can't see anything wrong with that.
Not at all. Yeah, absolutely right. Very good. Love that. So I hope there's lots of people who run trials listening to this. So, while we're on the trial design, for the doubters who stick to the mantra that there's no evidence for nutritional interventions in cancer, this trial was randomized. It was double-blind placebo-controlled trial. That's turned the gold standard for drug trials. So would you just explain how this panned out in your trial, what it looked like, and give us your view on the weight of the evidence that you've produced as a result?
You asked a couple of questions. Of course, there's lots of evidence that lifestyle and nutrition has a strong impact on the risk of developing cancer and the risk of progression. And I mean, look at the British biotech study publishing, you know, every few months, showing very strong correlations between, you know, amount of exercise you do, what you eat, gut health. So I just don't understand when people say that statement at all.
Right.
It's complete nonsense, clearly. I mean, what they may be hiding behind is, you know, there's lots of correlations between lifestyle and diet and cancer, but less interventions of diet and lifestyle to show an impact. And that's why we design double-blind randomized trials.
Yes.
We have to use, you know, objective interventions such as supplements, mainly because it's so difficult to do an intervention with just diet alone, because, you know, compliance is not good, recording what they're eating is not good. And often those studies turn out to be negative. And then the naysayers love this because they then say, oh, there's no evidence. But it's just because the trials are hard to do. It doesn't mean that that there isn't an effect. Mm. So we use supplements because we're able to measure and boost elements of the diet, such as in this case, phytochemical-rich foods. And as you know, phytochemicals are the things which give food its color, its smell and taste, and have lots of anti-inflammatory and other helpful properties. And also we used probiotics, which you substantially increase the amount of healthy bacteria you're taking. So that was the background. And the sort of primary endpoint for this study was really whether an intervention to improve gut health would improve outcomes of disease progression, which has not been shown or demonstrated before. In particular, we wanted to show that combining phytochemical-rich foods with lactobacillus or with healthy bacteria can have a synergistic effect. Now, we know in laboratory studies and previous cohort studies that there's a very strong synergy between these two elements of food, but it hadn't previously been reported in a prospective randomized design. And that was what made it quite unique, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. So I think, it's obviously very important because you're kind of building new ground here, that the trial design that you rely on is obviously got to have the most weight possible.
Yeah.
It's not like you're adding to a pool of data so much. So as you said, actual research in what you're doing in actually creating a direct effect is, is lean. There's not so much out there. All right. So you've been following a particular line with your research. It's been a journey where you've had kind of pragmatically chosen steps that lead in a particular direction. I wondered if you say something about the earlier trials you've done that have led up to this one that you've just completed.
So in the early days, we did a lot of evidence reviews, looking for the, what data's out there for, say, exercise. We did a lot of data on why, for example, exercise has an anti-cancer effect, breaking it down into the different properties, anti-inflammatory, improving oxidative stress, all those sort of things. We did the same thing for phytochemical-rich foods. So we did a lot of background international research showing potential benefits. And then we did an early study in 2013 with a supplement which had some phytochemical-rich foods, which was fairly successful. But then more recently, we moved into looking at the data which has been published over the last 14 years of new sort of, not new foods. Foods have been around for centuries, but
right.
Foods which have been discovered to have new properties, such as the benefits of organic ginger, looking at a bio enhancer and improving the absorption of phytochemicals from other foods. We had more data looking at things like cranberry, which could have independent benefits of its own, but also improve things like urinary symptoms. So we took this opportunity to sort of design a new supplement, which has got all the benefits, all the published benefits over the last 14 years, all the improvements in food technology, such as the ability to measure the levels of candidate phytochemicals. And we also looked at the data more recently, looking at gut health. Now, obviously, gut health is very trendy.
It is.
But there are enormous benefits for maintaining a healthy gut if you've got cancer. And I can go into the mechanisms of why. But in prostate cancer particularly, there is now emerging evidence that from the British Biobank study, that people with poor gut health are more likely to develop prostate cancer. And if you've got it, you're more likely to progress. So we were very keen to do a double-blind randomized trial to establish whether you could see those changes prospectively. So that's what, we did a lot of background work on gut health during COVID. I've previously been on your program talking about our COVID studies, and we quite clearly demonstrated that improving gut health in people with COVID reduce the symptoms and reduce the risk of developing long COVID. So we've got a lot of background experience looking at phytochemical-rich foods, improvements in gut health using probiotics. So the logical progression for us was to combine them both together and put them into one trial and see if we can get even better benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah, just to differentiate between those two types of study, you were just describing the retrospective. You're looking at data that already exists and you're trying to tease out some new information out of it. And it's good, but in terms of evidence for an intervention to actually treat somebody, it doesn't carry the same clout as a prospective study, which is what you've done. You've actually tried out these things as medicine.
Our trials are basically put through ethics and trial registration as you know, in the same strict criteria as a medicinal study. They aren't actually medicines. They still are foods and they can't be prescribed. But they, but yeah, the quality of the study is almost identical.
Yeah, excellent. So that's, of course, lends all the weight to actually using these as interventions, though, which is we really need.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role, just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Just want to speak a little bit more about phytochemicals. That word you've used it a lot, and you know, maybe everybody's not that aware of what you're talking about exactly, what these are, and how you've you've made particular selections of foods to use. How have you made those selections?
Yeah, I'm sorry about using the word phytochemical. I can't think of a more appropriate word. So when we were in medical school, we did nutrition and we talked about vitamins and minerals and fiber and carbohydrates and protein and everything. We never talked about phytochemicals. I didn't even know they existed until more recently. So these are the things, you know, if you look at a colourful plate with lots of colourful foods, it's the phytochemicals which provide that. And they also are linked now strongly with, reduced inflammation, improved immunity. They act as prebiotics to enhance gut health. There's some direct anti-cancer properties. So we know very strongly from laboratory studies and some now emerging clinical studies that they are very useful. People who eat a lot of these foods have a lower risk of cancer and lower risk of progression and relapse afterwards. So that's pretty established.
Right.
So obviously the trials we're trying to design is whether boosting them will have a further benefit over just diet alone. So the way we choose them is, well, back in 2013, we looked at all the phase two and laboratory data to the ones which had most impact on prostate cancer. So that came out as that time, broccoli, green tea, turmeric and pomegranate seemed to be the big candidates. Mm. We also wanted to use foods which were from different food groups, which have different benefits, mechanisms of benefit. So there's no point in combining four different foods which sort of work the same way. You want to use different pathways, right. And they have a synergy between them. As I said, over the last 14 years, other foods have emerged in the prostate cancer field, like ginger and cranberry. And also technology has improved where you can You can look at the levels of impurities within supplements, and also there's ways of fortifying them. So it's important not to just use extracts, because if you just use extracts, you're just taking one or two phytochemicals out. You need the whole spectrum of the food, because I think your body responds better to sort of whole spectrum of food. But you can fortify them by taking some extracts out and re-adding them to the food. So this new supplement has a broader range, but it's been fortified by adding extracts. So it's actually quite unique. As far as we know, it's the only supplement which has whole food and extracts combined.
Right.
So that's the background of why we developed this for this study.
Very interesting. Yeah. And that point you made about the whole foods, that we respond better to those than to just to extracts, as one worth appreciating. Mm. It's very interesting what you say about the ability to evaluate what a supplement consists of. In the past, that was one of the objections to supplements being used in a kind of medical situation, is that, you couldn't really tell how much there was or what, we didn't have the ability to measure those things then. But you're saying it's actually much more like a drug trial in this, from this perspective, that you're actually able to know exactly what you're giving to each person.
Yes. I mean, the MHRA, which is the regulatory body for drugs, still find supplements and food interventions a bit alien, because you cannot list every single ingredient.
No.
That goes without saying.
Right.
What you can do is say, look, we're going to use a type of, say, turmeric, for example, it's going to have minimum levels of candidate curcuminoids, so that there's at least a minimum standard to each ingredient. And that's sort of the best you can do. You can also look at heavy metal contamination and other bugs and microbes and things. So there's ways to make it purer and safer. But, you still can't list, there are thousands of different ingredients.
Right.
And you don't want to take those out, because you don't know if which ones of those are beneficial.
It's interesting. Yes, I completely appreciate what you're saying. And that's what makes the whole food different to just taking one bit.
Really?
There's so much to explore, really. As you say, you have a whole food and we think we know which the bit is that's doing all the work, but we could be wrong, of course.
Well, exactly. And there's a synergy between them. So, there are plenty of studies which have taken, things like vitamin E, and vitamin A studies have taken the pure chemicals out and put them into a capsule and give them to people. And most of those studies had to be stopped because actually they were not beneficial. In fact, it might have even caused a bit of worsening in instance of cancer. So, so it's better to stick as far as you can within a supplement as a whole food.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's, just a good thing to remember all round. Okay. So, you mentioned that you could say a bit more about the science relating to the role of gut microbiome in prostate cancer. I'd like to hear a bit, please.
We all know that, a healthy gut is good. If we have a healthy gut, we feel better, we get less bloated, have less fatigue. We have less chance of getting viral infections, more resistance to COVID and all sorts of nasty bugs. In terms of cancer, we know that people who have poor gut have a higher risk of inflammatory bowel disease, indigestion, constipation, bowel cancer, but also cancers elsewhere in the body. Now, there's several mechanisms for this. In terms of the gut, if you basically have a healthier gut with less inflammation, better local immunity and a more, less leaky gut, so good gut integrity. That means that toxins in the gut don't leak into the bloodstream. It improves overall immunity. So when you get toxins leaking into your bloodstream, your body elicits an inflammatory reaction against them, which then uses up immune pathways, so your immunity gets less, but also your chronic inflammation gets more. And these chronic inflammation is, you know, is like going to a battlefield with a load of machine guns, and you get a load of collateral damage. So it damages your pancreas, your brain, all sorts of things. So that combination of low immunity, high inflammation, and also high oxidative stress, which happens at the same time, is like a perfect storm for developing cancer. So the cornerstone is having good gut health in the first place. On top of that, healthy bacteria help with vitamin D absorption. We know many trials have given vitamin D and had no impact on serum levels, and that's because people have poor gut health. That's why I always advocate, if you're going to take vitamin D, to combine it with a probiotic. You're much more likely to get good absorption. And we showed that in our COVID study as well. It also, if you have good gut health, it helps you cope with carcinogens in the diet. So if you have, for example, nitrates in cheap meat, if you have no vegetables or low levels of phytochemicals and a poor gut health, it tends to get metabolized into nitrous amines, which are very carcinogenic. If you have good gut health and lots of phytochemicals around, it gets transported into nitric oxide, which is actually good for you. It causes vasodilation and increasing oxygenation in the tissues. So that's another way it helps. So, and you know, there's also some effect on hormone levels, and this comes into, you know, people with menopausal symptoms or hormone related symptoms. We know that poor gut health will alter the processing of estrogens and testosterone. So you know, that has an impact on hormone sensitive cancers. And that's an interesting fact. If you have men with prostate cancer who are on Zoladex for a long period of time, it's now recognized that just before they get resistant to their hormones, you get a change in gut health. And we don't know if it's cause or effect at this stage.
Right.
And that was one of the rationales for this study, to say, well, you know, we know that, you know, this change in a more inflammatory gut will make you more resistant to treatment. And that's why we looked at it.
Interesting. So further down the road, yeah, you'll be hoping to give the rationale for people who are on treatments like Zoladex to be taking this kind of program alongside it in order to extend the life of their primary treatment.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, Professor De Bono from the Institute of Cancer Research exactly said that statement recently.
Right.
Okay. He did an animal study which looked, which he actually gave animals who were developing resistance to their hormones. He gave them feces or bacteria from animals who were still, and humans actually, who were still sensitive, and he managed to change their sensitivity to the drug. So they actually became sensitive again. So, I mean, that's brilliant. Imagine if we can have an intervention with people with prostate cancer who are becoming resistant. You change their gut health, they get sensitive again. And it might give them another, you know, 5-10 years of control, which will save enormous money for the health service, because you don't have to go on to really expensive second and third line drugs.
Right.
And also, you know, you're improving quality of life, because if you're not using these second or third line drugs, you've got less side effects to them. So it's just from a simple maneuver like changing your gut health.
Amazing. Right. Anyway, that's a topic for a whole show on its own. That's what I have to do for today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Can we speak a little bit about the trial you've just completed, how you were monitoring what was going on? I mean, the PSA is clearly the marker for prostate cancer, but it's had a bit of flack in recent years as being not as good for diagnostics anyway. But it seems it's still pretty useful for monitoring, though. Can you give us an update on the status of the PSA?
No, that's exactly right, Robin. I mean, as a screening tool, it's not very good, but once you've got the diagnosis, it is actually very practically useful.
Right.
So we got 220 men, and we gave, as I said earlier in the show, we gave them all what we felt was the best phytochemical-rich supplement, based on all the things I've just previously said. Then we randomized them to either placebo or a probiotic supplement, which had five, you know, it was mainly lactobacillus, and I can go into the research why we chose that particular one. But, you know, we were happy with it. It was used previously in our COVID studies as well. So they were either given placebo or a probiotic. Most of the men entering the study were actually progressing on active surveillance. So they weren't on hormones, but they were a slightly not a stable population, you know. In fact, that's what attracted them to the trial, that they were progressing a bit and they were thinking of leaving active surveillance for, say, surgery or radiotherapy. So we knew the history of their PSA. So we looked at PSA before they entered the trial and after they entered the trial. We then also, we learned our lesson this time from the research we did 14 years ago, that we actually did MRI scans before and after as well.
Interesting.
Because obviously some people might say, as you alluded to, that a change in PSA might not be reflecting underlying disease. So we did MRI scan as well as PSA. And we also this time we measured urinary symptoms. And we measured that either before or after intervention and between the two randomized groups. So in other words, the effect of adding the lactobacillus.
Right.
And do you want me to talk about the results?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the highlight of the show. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were very pleased to see that, you know, as expected, because we'd shown it before, that the phytochemicals significantly slowed PSA progression, the rate of progression significantly slowed, which is, and for these men who were progressing before, that meant most of them decided to stay on active surveillance for longer.
Right. So that's potentially difficult and disabling treatments significantly into the future.
Yes. And what we were most excited about, and this was a world first, that in, if you compared then the men who had both the phytochemical rich supplement and the probiotic supplement, there was a 44%, which is quite major, reduction in PSA progression.
Really major.
And there was a significant difference between the two groups. So we we now have proven clinically what we sort of already knew from laboratory research and animal research, that combining phytochemicals with lactobacillus gives you a further benefit. And on top of that, we did MRI scans, and this is what we were most staggered with. You know, the most people in the study, their MRIs don't change much because they've got slow-growing disease.
You're right.
But there are a proportion. So there was a significant difference in the number of men who had reported progression on their MRI on the second MRI. And it absolutely interestingly, it was only 8 men, it was about 6%, actually showed a reduction in their disease on MRI. We very rarely see that. So we were seeing some men where the disease actually got smaller. The majority of men either then showed no progression or in the combined group, and there was some progression in the group which just had the phytochemicals. And the difference between the two was highly statistically significant. So what that means is that there, it wasn't just a PSA effect. It did correlate it with underlying disease. We also measured other things like markers of inflammation. Not surprisingly, there was a statistical difference in the levels of inflammation if you took the probiotics, which sort of has been demonstrated before, but it's nice to see it in writing.
Right.
And then because I'm actually a professor of sports medicine as well, as we used the University of Bedfordshire, which is the sports department, mm-hmm. we had to add some sort of physical activity endpoint. So we used grip strength. And grip strength is a very useful tool in clinical studies because it correlates with all sorts of things, longevity, risk of falls, overall quality of life. We found, and this was, don't forget, this was a blinded study, so people didn't know what they were on in terms of the probiotic. And we found a statistically significant difference in grip strength between the two arms.
Right.
So in conclusion, PSA dropped significantly, MRI changes were more significant, inflammation and grip strength were all better in the combined group.
Right. So for some of those people, your protocol added up to a prostate treatment. Basically, their prostate disease actually went in reverse. That would be normally achieved with a drug or some kind of intervention. And so that's really significant. But as you say, a small number, but a fantastic result for this large number who just basically got a reason to say, okay, nothing's getting any worse, so I'm fine. And so they could go on living a normal life and keeping control of their disease, which fantastic result.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we are continuing follow up, and you know, I'm a mainstream oncologist, specialist in prostate cancer. So we still use the same criteria for recommending, radical interventions, and that is, you know, is your PSA stable? Is your MRI stable? Are your symptoms stable? This is not instead of medical intervention, it's goes side by side. The other thing I forgot to mention, which was really pleasing for men, is there was a 25% improvement in urinary symptoms. And there was a small improvement in erectile dysfunction. Most of the men in, because the average age was about 70, actually had erectile dysfunction already. So that's why there was only 11% improvement. And we'd like to repeat this study in younger men,
right,
who may be getting erectile problems, maybe in their 50s. And that would be a useful new study to do. And so they were very pleased with that, that they actually felt not only stronger, they felt, you know, they didn't have to get up at night to pass water so much.
Yeah. Those are both very common symptoms, aren't they, of prostate? Yeah, and the kind of things that matter to people in their day-to-day life, of course. Fantastic! What a great result. So the nature of trials is you kind of hope to come out with new knowledge to apply in the real world, and you certainly seem to have done that in spades here. But you also end up with some more questions that need answering. That's what I seems to me.
Yeah.
And I appreciate you've only just got this trial out the door, but knowing you, I suspect you're cooking up another one to answer some of the pressing questions that remain. You get able to leak any preliminary plans?
Yeah, thank you for that, Rob. Yeah, you are absolutely right. I mean, you learn from, you know, part of the beauty of and interesting doing research is you learn things which you weren't expecting.
Yeah.
So we're clearly doing a longer follow-up. So we're recording all the men who've continued these supplements.
So to see the same cohort of patients you're following for longer.
Yeah, and also Excellent. We're recording people off trial, so just to try to get some more longer-term data, mm-hmm. which of course is very important.
Yes.
We are looking, you know, what we're now, because I work in UCLH 2 days a week now, and we've had meetings with the urology team there, and we are very keen to almost repeat the same study in men on androgen deprivation, already on Zoladex, for example, or equivalent.
Right.
And seeing, and it would be quite a straightforward study to do. You just, the trouble is you'd have to keep people on longer, so for several years, and see the number who then start progressing in the two arms. You know, and the laboratory data and the animal data I've already mentioned would strongly suggest that if you can maintain gut health, you will get less people progressing on primary androgens. But it's not been shown clinically, so that's definitely a trial which is in the pipeline.
No.
We're also working with the breast team because a previous study using similar supplements showed an improvement in joint pains, hot flushes, and mood in women taking aromatase inhibitors or ovary made postmenopausal. But that was only what we call a phase two study. It just showed an effect. And we'd love to do a randomized study in women with hot flushes or menopausal symptoms. You know, and we are very positive to think it would have an effect because I see it clinically. I've been an oncologist for 30 years, specialized in breast cancer. And I do get lots of reports of people saying they've taken them and felt better. But to convince the wider population, you really need a double-blind randomized trial. So that's the other plan we've got.
Mm. So you had a lot of successes with your trials over the years. Let's face it, they've a lot of them have been groundbreaking, world first, and have shown surprisingly good results. Traditionally, it can be pretty damn difficult to get financial support for running trials of natural products. Are you finding it easier with this track record you've got to get backing?
Good question. I mean, the reason is we've been looking at this for a long time. We've got a lot of experience. So we do try to design trials which are likely to be successful. I mean, they haven't all been. I mean, I've mentioned a few which were negative in the past. There were other supplements which we use which aren't well known because the trials were negative. So they haven't all been positive. Funding is difficult. The way we do it is, first of all, you know, we all are paid by the NHS, so we encompass this in our daily job. So our research manager is paid by the NHS. We link with the local university who are very keen to collaborate with us. So they give us, a good rate on their statistical analysis, so to speak, because they get a good... But still expensive. We get a lot of funding from local charities like golf clubs, bowling clubs who work in the area. And we're able to, you know, do initiatives like, for example, they would pay the university directly. So there's a lot of sort of juggling going on that side. For the supplements themselves, you'd think that most manufacturers would be chomping at the bit to donate, but... You know, it's not easy to, it is quite expensive to develop a new supplement, especially to the standard we want for a clinical trial. For example, we had quite a few people declining to offer help, particularly the people who previously helped us. If you go around, we did find a couple of manufacturers who were willing to develop these for us. And the reward they get is if there is a clinically significant finding that they do, they can then make the products commercially, they can sell them. But of course, you know, these aren't patentable products.
No.
So they may get a bit of a head start.
Yes, but other people could compete.
Yeah, and that's why drug companies aren't interested, because they, you know, so they do benefit. I'm not saying they don't. And that's why we get the funding. So we get the supplements free and we get local donations. And of course, we still get paid by the NHS. Right. So we're able to get these trials through.
Mm, brilliant. Anyway, you've done some fantastic work, still doing fantastic work. I wonder, do you want to tell our listeners how they can follow your work?
Yeah, I do. I do have a newsletter, or I contribute to a newsletter, which you can sign up. I also write a couple of blogs on keep-healthy.com. So I try to, any topics which I think are important for patients, I try to do a short summary on there. So that would include, for example, a summary of the study. We've also put things like, I get a lot of questions about things like metformin and, you know, gut health generally. So I'll try to do blogs on that, just giving a brief summary. So I suppose the most important would be keep-healthy.com.
Okay. And do you want to just mention your most recent book, which I understand is currently under the spotlight in Yes to Life's online book club?
Oh, fantastic. I've reached the pinnacle of my career. Yeah. So my latest book is How to Live, which is still fairly topical. It doesn't mention this particular study, but it mentioned the COVID studies, and it just gives a background on, you know, why lifestyle and diet is so important. So there's some quite technical bit, but also some practical advice on what we can do to you know, make us feel better on a daily basis and live longer and stronger.
Excellent. All right. Thanks so much for that. And thanks for telling us about your amazing trial. Brilliant. More power to you, Professor Thomas.
Thank you very much for having me, Robin. It was a pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
The continual revelations about the importance of the microbiome to our well-being are sobering, especially when you consider the scant respect we have for it, particularly in cancer, in which many of the treatments cause absolute devastation to our microbiome. That such a simple intervention could have so much impact on outcomes should be a wake-up call for oncology. Many thanks for joining me today. I'm hoping you'll join me again next week when I'll be back with the next Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.